You're listening to the Shared Security Show, exploring the trust you put in people and technology, hosted by Tom Esten, Scott Wright, and Kevin Johnson. Welcome to episode 216 of the weekly Shared Security Show. And joining me this week is our resident Canuck co-host Scott Wright from the wonderful land of Canada, and Hawaiian shirt guy co-host Kevin Johnson.
I should have worn a Hawaiian shirt today.
Canuck.
You're a Canuck.
What is a Canuck?
You don't know what a Canuck is? You're in Canada.
A Canuck, not a Canuck.
See, I'm so American, I mispronounce
You're
it.
So American, you can't even pronounce
it. It's not about Canuck.
Out and about.
A boot.
I always thought it was Canuck.
See? Florida man says it's that. So
yeah. I'm going to say, Scott, you're wrong. We outvoted you. There's two of us, one of you. We win. That's democracy.
Just come take us. Just annex us. Why don't you?
Yeah. Hey.
Ooh, is that too low?
No. There are other countries being invaded by other countries. We don't want to join that mess.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. Uh-uh. That's messed up.
So before we get started, I did just a few announcements. I did want to, I did call Kevin Hawaiian shirt guy because, his company Secure Ideas has an actual, Hawaiian shirt, or call it an aloha shirt, from his company that, they are selling. They're very cool. We'll have a link in the show notes that you can check them out. But the best part about the aloha shirts is that a proceeds go to St. Jude's Children's Hospital, which is probably one of the best charities I know here in the U.S. that people can donate to. So anything else you want to say about that, Kevin? Or
The only thing I'd say is, one, thank you for sharing it. I'm really excited. And let's be very clear that what this was I wanted a professional evil Hawaiian shirt. And I'm talking internally like, hey, let's find prices and do this and da-da-da-da. And then Jason Gillum, he said, why don't we sell them and donate money to charity? And I'm like, okay,
yeah,
we can do that.
Great idea.
Do I still get a shirt? Yes, done. And so we put it out there. And if you're inside the 48 states, shipping is included. If you're not inside the 48, Scott, I'm looking at you.
Or in Canada, yeah.
Right. Yeah. Reach out to us before you buy one and we'll figure out what we can do.
Sure.
I have no idea how much shipping to Canada is. That's probably one we could just do. I don't know.
$2 million.
But, yeah.
Plus
$2
that.
$2 million.
So, Fun story. What a lot of people here in Ottawa do is they order it and have it shipped to the UPS store in Ogdensburg across the St. Lawrence River. And then drive 50 minutes, cross the bridge, pay the toll, go to the UPS store, come back, and then hopefully declare.
I was going to say, we could put it on a truck and drive it up to Ottawa, but that would be a bad idea, right?
Yeah.
No
yeah.
more trucks.
God, man. Oh, I'm the guy that's supposed to put the rude jokes out.
Sorry. Too soon? Too soon? Okay.
Too soon.
No, the truck issue's all gone, right, Scott? Like, that's all cleared up, isn't it?
Oh, the truckers are gone. Yeah. That's just old news. Big mess. Yeah.
That's right. And then the other announcement I wanted to just make was ClearVPN, which is a sponsor. They sponsored a podcast last year. They had reached out to me because they are a Ukrainian-based company and wanted to put some links for you guys if you're interested in finding ways to help support the Ukrainians in their in the war that's going on. So there's some links if you wanted to donate money to certain Ukrainian organizations or the Ukrainian army. And they also have some promotions just for if you're in Ukraine or if you're a journalist, they're offering free software that you can take advantage of. So we'll have those links in the show notes. And if you're interested in helping out, that's awesome. So with that, let's get into the news this week. And we're going to start with a new attack that can force Amazon Echoes to hack themselves with self-issued commands in a new attack called Alexa versus Alexa, or Alexa Ava. Versus Alexa. I find this one interesting. So the way that this works is that basically it will use its own device speaker to issue voice commands as long as the speech contains the wake word. So say Alexa or Echo, followed by a command. The Echo will carry it out. And even when there's devices that require like verbal confirmation before executing like sensitive commands, like turn off the alarm system or something else, you can bypass that by just adding the word yes a couple seconds after issuing the command. And there's a couple other things, but this does require obviously proximity to a vulnerable Echo device while it's turned on. So the other way that this can work is that you attach, the attacker attaches basically a Bluetooth enabled device, and then that device can be communicated to issue the commands to the vulnerable Echo. So
interesting stuff. I think part of it, I don't think you just mentioned this, but it can also rely on a radio station, a malicious radio station kind of thing, where it calls, Echo to get a skill that is actually malicious. And
yep. Yeah.
That's what does it.
I believe, and this is not going to be a popular option.
I'm waiting for it.
But I believe that papers like this are one of the reasons why so many people have lost faith in our higher education model. The fact that multiple colleges have allowed students to say, do research over a period of time. And I did not pay enough attention to the research to determine how long they spent researching this, that they basically announced, hey, if I'm near an Alexa device and I yell out, Alexa, reset, it will reset. And I believe that anybody who has ever watched TV knows that this is possible. I mean, yes, the Amazon commercials have that signal.
They do.
There's a sound that they play before they say the wake word so that the device ignores it because it's a commercial.
We should have that on our podcast because we say it so often.
I know.
That's why mine's muted now.
Yeah, mine is too.
I knew better.
You might have seen me look over this way before I said anything to make sure I could see the red light. Mm-hmm. Come on, people. Like this is not a new attack. Yes. There are aspects of this that are interesting. Oh, hey, if I have access to the device and I pair my Bluetooth headset, I can issue commands over my Bluetooth headset. No, duh. The malicious skill is interesting.
It is.
Where the skill will respond with things and stuff like that. I think that's interesting. I still have issue with saying this is a new attack that people should be worried about. If you have a smart device in your home and its microphone is on, you should be worried about this kind of stuff. Period. Done. You know who else you should be worried about? Your four-year-old that knows how to order stuff from Amazon.
So you got stuff showing up at your house.
Yeah. True.
Like, come on.
Yeah. So to be fair, too, I mean, these vulnerabilities were reported to Amazon, and they did fix the radio station issue or attack vector. And, you know, Amazon released a statement saying that they believe this is a medium severity risk, right? Because of the fact that you have to be in somebody's physical location to do this, right? Or at least to set the attack up, right? It is interesting because there is the potential for abuse by a tech-savvy domestic partner that might be abusive or, you know, something like that to make somebody's life hell, right? That is possible.
And I think that kind of stuff is very important for smart device manufacturers to completely think about, right?
Yeah.
But I will also say, you used an example in your introduction that every system I have tested, this is not possible. Hmm. But not tested all systems.
Right.
You made the comment that if you had a smart alarm system, you could turn off your alarm via the Echo.
Right.
Every smart alarm system I've looked at, they are not able to disarm via voice.
I did with my, when I had ADT, I connected that to my Alexa and I could turn on the alarm and turn it off through voice commands.
That is crazy because we had ADT here at the office. We used to, we don't anymore. And when we had ADT, we could turn on the alarm. We could not turn it off.
Interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. We could turn off the alarm through a SmartThings type of mm-hmm. interaction.
Yeah.
Right. But we were not able to turn it off via the Echo.
Yeah.
And I had to do a reach out to ADT.
Yeah.
They said, nope, we don't allow that. So that's
maybe they changed that. They could have changed it because, but I do remember I had to put in it was like a pin or a you know, a safe word or whatever to actually turn that off. To
give the Echo interesting. Because we've played with multiple alarm systems and almost every smart alarm system is a bad idea to put on your network. But
yeah, testing only.
Yeah, that's like we have a lab network that they were on. And every single, and I think we tested like half a dozen different ones, and none of them allowed for you to verbally turn off your alarm. That's interesting. Okay. So, I think this is interesting, unique, fun. I also think that if these students at these universities, and there's two of them, right? One in Italy and one in the UK, there's three researchers. I really think they could have done a much better job actually testing and researching something that was useful. But that's my opinion.
Kevin is very opinionated, as we all know.
Very. Show, very. So. Just call me Jarvis.
And, yes, right. All right. Well, let's move into our next segment, which is Aware Much.
Yes, thanks, Tom. So people in the U.S. apparently know of an app called Zelle.
Yes.
I'd never heard of it. Mm-hmm. But this is a banking app that is actually having some trouble these days because people are getting scammed through social engineering, causing funds transfers. And one example is, you know, someone gets a call from somebody apparently from the bank, like Wells Fargo Bank or something, and because the person didn't have their mobile phone directly linked to the Zelle app, they were doing it through their email or something. There's some vulnerability there that allows the attacker to get them to say, you need to send money to yourself because of some error. And they actually link the victim's phone number or the victim's account to the their own attacker phone number. So there's some interesting variations on this one, but all that to say, it's costing a lot of money. And what's really interesting is the banks are actually absolving themselves of responsibility. In fact, customer service agents are saying, well, this happens all the time.
Yeah.
They're telling people, yeah, sorry, we can't do anything. But it's odd that Zelle is actually a jointly owned company by several large US banks. And apparently they don't see any irony in this, or they don't care about the irony. But the only way that people are managing to get money back sometimes is by going to the news media, which is kind of interesting and sad. So that's the basic story, just brought to you by ClickArmor, our gamified training and recurring exercises now for security awareness. We have new technology we call phishing challenge streams, which really sends out weekly email challenges to people to play, learn about different kinds of attacks like fake invoices and help desk scams and stuff like that. So it just keeps people sharp. And, you know, there's a long decaying level of knowledge after you take your annual training. And this is really going to support that. So it's available in both ClickArmor Enterprise and ClickArmor MSP. So go to clickarmor.ca/sharedsecurity and we can help you out with that.
What does it mean to go off the grid? Well, for most of us that are constantly relying on our smartphones, tablets, and laptops, it means shutting them off and doing some other activity, like getting outside or spending time with friends and family. Now, you're probably a lot like me and struggle with turning off or putting down that smartphone because we always feel the need to be constantly connected. Listen, it's hard to go off the grid. But the good news is that there are products that can help. So that's why I recommend using a silent Faraday bag, which can instantly block all wireless signals, quickly taking you off the grid and giving you back control of your wireless devices. Check out their full product line at slnt.com. And because you listen to this podcast, make sure you use discount code SHAREDSECURITY at checkout to receive 10% off your order.
If I may ask, Scott, yes. I read the article, I've looked into this. Am I correct that that there isn't a vulnerability in Zelle that they're exploiting? That what they're doing is they're social engineering the user to approve or transfer money
yes.
or whatever. Right.
Yeah. I think you're right for the most part, but I kind of feel there's got to be a vulnerability there where somebody can actually convince you to assign their phone to your account. Right. You must have to because you'd send a message to the phone and then the attacker would say, I don't know if there's a way around that, but it sounds like something that is kind of a.
So the way that
they're obviously exploiting. Yeah.
So usually the attacker has access to the person's online banking account or a way to initiate a Zelle
account.
Right. Like you could just sign up for Zelle without the bank account and it tries to verify who you are. And by doing that, it will send you a two-factor auth code to your phone. Yeah. And what happens is the attacker gets you on the phone and says, hey, this is your bank. We see that there's a transaction that's happening. Please verify your code. And what you're doing is you're allowing the attacker access to your bank account.
Yep. Yeah. That's how I understood it.
Okay. I got it backwards then. Sorry about that. But it seems like there shouldn't be a way, though, or there should be something that would alert the person that they're connecting to an account that they didn't think they were.
Yeah. I will ask, and I'm not arguing it. I'm curious. I just watched a video that was like, man, that's awesome and awful and evil. And there was this lady, and she was putting a deposit into an ATM, and there was a person behind her. And as she was doing everything, right, there was a problem with the ATM machine, and the person behind her was like, let me help you, right? And they swapped, and as they were dealing with stuff, somehow, now I'm blanking on it, she handed the deposit envelope to the guy behind her, and he swapped it with another envelope. And so, she handed it, he handed back a different envelope, and then he left.
Sleight of hand.
Right? Now, here's my question. Would the bank be responsible for that?
That's a great question.
And I think the answer is no.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah.
So I'm curious why we think the banks should be responsible for you falling for. And I'm not arguing it because I totally believe that banks get away with absolving themselves from responsibility way too often.
Yeah.
But everything about this attack says to me the person fell for a social engineering attack and gave access to somebody. Let's be blunt, right? When my mom lived with me, she had the ability to access my bank account. If she took money from my bank account, the bank would not be responsible for that.
Yeah.
Because you've given
You're right. I don't know if there's actually any proactive or preventative measure that the banks could be, responsible for doing or be expected to do.
I can think of ways they could do it. They could make the sign up process way higher touch.
Yeah.
Right. But that's a balancing act, right? I want access right now type of thing.
Yeah. But if you're able to transfer thousands of dollars, I mean, you kind of think, somebody should be looking out for you, but apparently not.
I absolutely think somebody should be looking. I totally agree with you, Scott. Somebody should be looking out for you. I'm just where my brain is going with it is it's kind of like when people say, oh, it was cyber theft. There is no such thing as cyber theft.
Yeah.
That's theft. It just happened to use a network, right? Right. So if we treat,
I was telling Tom, in Canada, for example, in the banking system here, there are only five or six large banks. So everybody kind of has one of the few. It kind of makes it easy for attackers, right? You can get 20% of the people by saying you're with Desjardins or something. But all the banks' terms and conditions for using online banking, in the fine print, it says, you're responsible for your account if it gets logged in with your password. So if you get scammed or your password gets stolen, you're out of luck, right? So otherwise, you actually have $50,000 worth of deposit insurance on your account, unless they find that case where they say, well, it was using your online banking password. So they're always going to look for a way to get out of that.
Yeah. I think the other problem with it is that the banks have purposely made it very easy to activate this within an online banking account. So I looked at mine. So my bank, and I'm part of just like a regional bank and not a massive, you know, like Bank of America. And they actually have it where I can just click a button in the app and I automatically can start sending money through Zelle.
It's funny.
It's that easy. And that's
my credit union doesn't support Zelle, doesn't support Plaid, doesn't support all these types of things. And I'm like, oh, awesome. And we just got notified like last week that they're doing an upgrade to the online banking system. And all of a sudden we're going to have Zelle and Plaid and all. And I'm like, so I'm going to have to go look and check, because you're absolutely right. They absolutely make it easy for you to, you know, to do it. And that's a problem. But I don't know. These are one of those ones where I'm not saying it's good. I'm just saying I don't know the right answer.
Yeah. It's a gray area for sure.
Yeah.
Yep.
But we can all hate on banks because they have more money than us. So.
That's right.
And they care a lot about that.
They just said they can make unlimited money because they're a bank.
Yeah.
And they really care what we think about them.
They do. Yes.
They do. The customer is always right or some crud like that.
That's right. So, last story of the week, Samsung confirms hackers have stolen the Galaxy source code. This is interesting. So Galaxy devices, very popular, phones and tablets that are out there. There was a breach apparently that the same hackers that have hacked NVIDIA. So that was another, we didn't really cover the NVIDIA story, but they had hacked NVIDIA and they had shared screenshots showing about 200 gigabytes of stolen data, including the source code used by Samsung for encryption and biometric unlocking functions on Galaxy hardware. Samsung did not confirm or deny the identity of the hackers or whether or not they had stolen data related to encryption or biometrics, but they said that no personal data belonging to employees or customers had been taken. So they basically had inadvertently confirmed that this was true without saying it was true. The NVIDIA hack. So if you're not familiar with that, that hacking group attempted to blackmail NVIDIA, threatening to leak all their data unless NVIDIA removed cryptocurrency mining limiters from their GPUs and then made their drivers open source, which is kind of funny.
I laughed at that one.
Yeah. But this group has not made any extortion attempts towards Samsung as of yet.
That's probably because nobody wants the source code to knock. <What's there>? I held up my Samsung phone.
As you hold that up, yes. And I guess this brings up we've seen source code breaches before. I mean, I think this is pretty serious in terms of, you know, depending on how seriously they take the security of their source code. I mean, as we talked about on the show before, if you have access to the source code, you can find vulnerabilities. You now fully understand how everything works, and it's a pretty large risk having that exposed.
Yeah.
You also have a business problem where if your source code's out there, right, and any of it is protected, I guarantee you that most of it, if not, it's not all, but most of it is protected by trade secrets.
Oh, yeah.
Patents or something.
Proprietary
like that.
And it's a nightmare.
Here in the US, at least, well, there are some exceptions, but the law does not protect trade secrets. Right. The whole protection of trade secrets is that you, the organization, protect it. If they release it this way, competitors can make use of that. So we have the security issue, but we also have the business issue. And of course, the answer is, OK, how'd they get it? Like, what else did they have access to? OK, so Samsung says customers and employees data is not stolen, but I'd like to believe that their source code is in a somewhat secured portion of their network, the same way customer data is, right? So I don't know. I think this is interesting. I think it's bad that it happened. I think for the vast majority of users out there, this will have zero impact in the short and even the long term, right?
Users for sure, but businesses perhaps later could be targeted, right? With
Well, if they find vulnerabilities, everybody can be targeted. If you've got a Samsung device and they find vulnerabilities in the code, because I saw, one of the comments, people were like, oh, they can now reverse engineer it. It's like, no, they don't have to reverse engineer it.
Nope.
They've got it.
Source code.
It's backed up as far as it can go.
That's right.
And the best part is it's even got the comments, and they're so much fun to read.
Yes.
Developer comments? Yes.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
They are. Yeah. I keep thinking of people like, or groups like the NSO group, extremely valuable for writing 0 days, future 0 days, things like that.
Zero click exploits.
Yeah. Right? All kinds of things. Yeah. So that'll be interesting to see how this plays out. I was thinking of how did they gain access to source code? And I don't know, they haven't released the attack vector, but I remember pen testing, and I used to find source code all the time in .bak files hanging out on a directory off a public website. I'm just saying, I know it's 2022, but
used in a USB drive transferring from one machine to another, and then the guy used it for something else and took it home. And
Forget back files. You compromise the workstation, and it's the developer. The developer has the source code, right?
Yeah, of course, it's on their workstation. Right? Yeah.
Yeah. I have source code on my workstation for projects I'm working on. And if I was the Galaxy developer, I've used Galaxy for a while. There's just one developer.
And it's just one person.
I would love more information on the compromise, and I'd like to read the comments in the source.
That's right. All right. Well, with that, I think that's all we have for this week's episode, but thank you both for great conversations as always. And, and for all of our listeners, if you haven't checked out our Reddit community, make sure you do that. We're always posting interesting things,
and you can comment.
You can comment on topics from the show or other articles that we find.
Post your own articles. Yeah,
that's right. Yeah. We'd love to hear more from our listeners. So with that, thank you all for listening and watching on YouTube, and we will talk to you all next week. That's all for this week's show. Visit our website, sharedsecurity.net, for all previous episodes and to sign up for our email newsletter. Looking for shared security merch? Be sure to check out our shop at store.sharedsecurity.net. Don't forget, you can always find us on Twitter at SharedSec. And if you like this episode, please share it with friends and colleagues. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you next week for another episode of the Shared Security Show.